Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, I know I can be strong.
And you're going to need it, Israel, because the whole world is turning against you. Some of it you've brought on yourselves. Others, it is the direct result of progressives who are thoughtless and of Muslims who are insane, monstrous. It dawned on me this this evening, that these protests that are taking place across college campuses, accusing Israel of being colonizers. Can you tell me, Kirk, you're a history buff, in the last 500 years, what are the most famous colonies in the history of the world?
The United States.
United States. Most famous colonies in the modern world in the last 400 or 500 years, the United States, where Europeans came over and they stole the land from the Indians. So in this in this country, you have Muslims accusing Jews of being colonizers. But last time I checked, the Jews were colonizing their own homeland. So how could you be that utterly out of touch with reality? I want to share something from the Quran. It was cathartic yesterday. I did something just haven't done in a long time. I took an hour off from writing after my summation and commentary on Quran 533. I'm going to sneak up on it here for you. I'm going to go back to Quran 530 so that you can understand why I needed a timeout. Quran 5:30 reads, "Then obeyed him, his soul, to kill his brother. So he killed him and became of the losers. Then Allah, who released and sent into motion an abundance of foreign blackness, it dug by scratching in the ground to show him how to elude, conceal, and hide a badly treated, disgraced, and vexing annoyance, which was shamefully vicious and evil of his brother. He said, 'Woe to me! I am lacking, behind, and frustrated, that I am like this, the passing darkness, the strange blackness, being equivocal, elusive, and ambiguous, in concealing a vexing annoyance and shamefully vicious evil of my brother.' Then he began of the regretful." Quran 5:32, "From that time that we wrote on the children of Israel that he who kills a soul other than a soul or corruptors, tainted, mischievous, invalid, or spoiled in the earth, then is as if he has killed the uplifted among the people, gathered and collected together. And whoever lives it, then is as if he has lived the uplifted among the people gathered and collected together, and lo, surely came to being to them are sent out with separation, disunion, and severing between collected here and there, lo, an overwhelming number of them remote and removed, that in the earth eating away, suckling ignorantly, extravagantly squandering and wasteful. Now, how would you guys like to spend 12 to 14 hours a day dealing with a word salad like that?
No.
This is allegedly, Allah's rendition of the story of Cain and Abel.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You wouldn't know it because it's actually a rendition of the Talmud's story of Cain and Abel. And Cain and Abel aren't even mentioned.
Well,
I picked up
therefore,
on it, but
Allahu
really
is reporting
big.
That it's okay even for the Jews to kill Jews if they're the least bit tainted or invalid, even mischief makers by scoffing at the nonprofit for stealing his citation from the Talmud. Satan is, therefore, providing a carte blanche for mass murder and an ensuing cover-up, which sounds similar to what occurred on October 7th of this past year. Should that have been the intent, there is no explanation as to why the life or death of one should be equal to the salvation or destruction of all mankind. However, when we turn to another Jewish citation, we find that this bizarre interpretation of the Torah came from the Talmud Mishnah, Sanhedrin 4. There we read, "We find it said, in the case of Cain, who murdered his brother, the voice of his brother's blood crieth. It is not said that their blood in the singular, but blood's in the plural, that is, his own blood and the blood of his seed. Man was created single in order to show him who kills a single individual, it shall be reckoned that he has slain the whole race. But to him who preserves the life of a single individual, it is counted as if he hath preserved the whole human race." Talmud Mishnah Sanhedrin 4.5. Therefore, the verse that Islamic apologists errantly translate and cite out of context to suggest that the Quran and Islam are not murderous and sadistic was not only followed by one which proves otherwise. The positive message was composed by a Jewish rabbi and not by Allah. This realization is factually irrefutable, and the consequence is undeniable. And then this, Quran 5:33. "Only that the rendering, recompense, and reward for those who conflict, are frustrated, battle, or pray with or against Allah and his sent messenger, and walk or just work upon the earth, wrong or invalid, corrupt or mischievous, they be slaughtered or put to death by crucifixion, or have their hands and feet cut off and severed on other sides, or they be banned, driven away, and cast out, removed from the earth. That for them, jeez, vile and despicable abasement, shameful affliction, and evil degradation in the down-low world of the here and now. And for them, in the retreating backward of the hereafter, a glorious and grievous punishment, and magnified and abounding torturous torment." Gruesomely and appallingly, Quran 5:33 was clearly written by Allah's standards. There's no mitigating or resolving the wannabe God's edict to annihilate the human race, mutilating and torturing everyone in the process. This makes Islam a more formidable foe than the Black Death, bubonic plague, Ebola, or smallpox, but perhaps not as lethal as a nuclear holocaust. It plainly states that there are only four ways for a Muslim to reward and abase those who are in conflict with any aspect of Islam, who are frustrated by the religion or even pray to the Islamic God, including everyone who walks or works. According to Allah, they must be slaughtered, crucified, mutilated to the point of incapacitation, or banned and removed from the planet. And if that were not enough for informed, rational, moral, and civilized people to strive to quarantine Islam, after sadistically torturing and annihilating everyone on earth in a vile and despicable manner, degrading humanity in the process, Allah as Satan intends to inflict a glorious and grievous torment, a great and magnificent torture. So now we know that the religion of Islam and humanity cannot coexist. Yes. So even if you are among those with the good sense, the courage and compassion to isolate the overtly religious who are infected with this plague, then surely you see the merit in making all expressions of Islam illegal.
Right.
With Muslims smelling blood and circling for the destruction of Israel and the extermination of Jews, protesting on behalf of this death cult worldwide, they will not stop there should they prevail. Those who are encouraging and assisting them in America and Europe will be next. There are far more deadly and despicable Muslims now than there were Nazis at the beginning of the last world war.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what happened then.
Yes.
So our survival is dependent upon not letting that occur again. And that can be accomplished by making Islam illegal, shuttering all mosques, sequestering Islamic protests, and eliminating Islamic literature in the free world. Scream as they may, freedom of religion does not extend to those devoted to genocide. Freedom of speech does not apply to those seeking to extinguish life on the planet, plundering it in the process. And mind you, neither freedom of religion nor freedom of expression exist in Islam. This is the final surah. This diabolical mandate was not abrogated. This is Allah's and Muhammad's parting shot at the world. It is the enduring expression of their pledge of Aqaba, the pledge to wage war against all mankind. The fifth suratan is Islam's legacy. We deal with this reality or we die from it. Muslim apologists argue that repentance prevents these tortures and that Allah is oft forgiving, most merciful. But that's not what this says. And even if it did, the exemption would be to prevent the eradication of the human race, such that the only subhuman life forms left on the planet would be the most murderous and sadistic Muslims. Recognizing that Allah wouldn't be the devil without an exception, there is one, but this one doesn't matter. It is a thin veil over an ugly beast, because it only applies to a peaceful and hypocritical Muslim who renounces the moderation of Islam and returns to being a murderous thug in submission to Halal bin Shakar prior to being overwhelmed by Muslims annihilating humankind. Quran 5:34 reads, except and unless the one who returns in a repentant manner, adapting from before an advance of your determination and means, even your destiny to overpower them. And then be aware that Allah, He protective, covering over and hiding, pardoning. It wasn't worth the breath to recite it, much less the ink not used to write it. The exemption is without distinction. There is no difference whatsoever between a sadistically murderous Muslim hell-bent on annihilating the human race and a Muslim who rejoins the sadistically murderous Muslims hell-bent on exterminating humanity, such that he or she participates in the slaughter. Furthermore, if there were a distinction associated with the exemption, the one offering to cover over the crime, hiding the evidence, and issuing a pardon for the mutilation, crucifixion, and slaughter of humankind is the one who called for the torture and extinction of us all. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
There is merit to stopping here, to closing the book, to dealing with Islam as we must, and then moving back to embracing the emancipating and uplifting, the enlightening and empowering, and the especially enriching text of Yahweh's testimony. After all, Allah has inflicted a fatal blow, not only against Islam, but against himself. Should we do any more, we'd just be carving up a corpse. As a reader, it is in your interest and likely Yisrael's to turn your and their attention to Yahweh. He is the future. Religion will soon be in mankind's past. Regarding Islam, I have nothing more that I can teach you that is going to make a difference beyond what you already know. Together, we have endured a 3,200-page rebuke of it. Allah, Muhammad, the Quran, Sunnah, and the nature of and purpose of good Muslims. This has been the most comprehensive and irrefutable denunciation of the religion ever composed.
Yes.
The answers are as clear as the moral choices are obvious. Those of you who have journeyed alongside as we have explored the most hellish of religions, thank you. I appreciate you more than words can express. If you were among the first to venture into this murderous realm with me, then you are one in a million. I suspect that you are already part of God's family, but if not, hopefully, you will engage in the Bereth Covenant by reading the remaining books on the shelf of yadayah.com. Time is short, and the world as we know it doesn't have many more days before it is all over, and there's still so much to achieve on behalf of God's people. As for me, I'm going to remain here until the bitter end, leaving no stone unturned or unthrown. It is my commitment to God, our King, and his people. And while I might not be the best of men, I'm going to give the best of them all I have to offer. That's what I wrote.
I love it.
Yesterday afternoon and again this evening. I have now moved past and deeper into the fifth surat, and I'm a little over halfway through it, and I will finish it. And we will complete Goddamn Religion 4, and we will have rendered the most comprehensive, the most undeniable, edict ever against this death cult of Islam. It is the only answer I know to what is transpiring around the world as the world devolves into a anti-Semitic rage, delirium, far worse than what we experienced in Nazi Germany and in the Ukraine in the 1930s. With that, I want to jump back into the Mizmor. We, over the course of these past couple of months, we have shared the first, second, third, and fourth Mizmor, and we jumped into the 11th with college students wasting their education by crying out on behalf of rapists and terrorists and mass murderers and human traffickers. And so this evening I want to return to that process. We're going to rejoin at the psalm. This Mizmor was written by the king I serve, that we should all be serving. He is God's son. He is the Messiah. He is also our Savior, the Zoroah. He is the most brilliant of all orators, one of the great thinkers in human history, and the man that our Creator, Yahweh, loved more than any other. And so when he speaks, we should all listen. And in this Mizmor, he has a lot to say. And excuse me, just a moment. I did get choked up as I shared that with you. That's why I took an hour off from writing yesterday. And I am equally passionate, but in a positive way with Dote.
Yeah.
This for us is the essence of life. It is our reason for breathing. It is why we do this program. It's why there are so many who support it and these books. It is why I have been in this chair an average of 14 hours a day since 10/7 of last year. Soon be 7 months. We are just four days away from it being 7 months. So I am devoted to trying to save Israel from Islam. But even more importantly, I want Israel to recognize that God does have a son.
Yeah.
That we do have a Savior. That there not only is a Messiah, but the Messiah is returning. That Yahweh is returning. God has a name. And he has a plan. And his return is not very far off. It is on the day of reconciliations in year 6,000 Yah. That is less than 10 years from now. That is sundown, 6:22 p.m. in Jerusalem, October 2nd of 2033. That's how close we are to this, all transpiring, just as God had predicted. Now, I want those who are listening to know that between now and then, life's going to get exceedingly dark for everyone on the planet, but particularly for Israelites and Yehudim. As bad as they think it is now, it will get far worse. According to Yahweh, far worse than at any time in human history. Think about how Jews were treated by the Philistines, by the Egyptians, by the Egyptians, by the Assyrians, by the Babylonians, by the Midians even, Amalek, by the Greeks, by the Romans again, by the Roman Catholics, by the Third Reich, Think about how bad it has been. And when Yahweh says, this will be far worse than anything anyone has ever experienced or can even imagine.
Wow.
And while that sounds horrible, it actually isn't the best possible news. Because unfortunately, since the days of Jews complaining bitterly against Moshe, when he tried to save the one being beaten by the taskmaster, and the Jews turned on him. When the Jews were freed from Egypt and had reached the beach at Nineveh and had the sea in front of them with God leading them, and they turned to Moshe and said, we'd have been better off being slaves in Egypt than dying here. We want to go back. And when Moshe tried to inspire them, God said, would you shut up? That's a waste of time. Stop talking, raise your staff, part the sea, and leave, will you please? They got to the other side. What did they do? They bellyached about water. One of the most despicable incidents in the history of God's people. And I'm sharing this with you because it was during the Exodus that it became obvious that even with God in their presence and doing everything necessary to liberate them, to protect them, to free them, to give them their land, Jews were obnoxious.
Yeah.
You spit in God's face. You were embittered. You were cantankerous. You didn't even want to listen to him. You told him to go away. You worshipped false gods. You said you'd rather live as slaves in the Egyptians than be enlightened and uplifted and free. There's something seriously wrong, and it has been wrong for 3,500 years, and it's still wrong. And that's why this horrible treatment of Jews, that complete failure of every Jewish institution, of Judaism, and of Israeli politics, and of progressive liberal Jews in America, in Europe. There is a complete failure across the board, and it's going to get worse as the entire world turns against God's people. And then when there's no place to go, the IDF is failing. Government of Israel is failing. When there's no place to turn, only then will God's people finally turn to him. And when they do, there is a treasure trove, a bookshelf, filled with over 30 books, all free, yadayah.com, to know Yah. All there waiting for you, introducing you to God. Telling you all you need to know about him to be part of his family. Revealing what needs to be known at this time. Inviting you to return, to come back home. At the same time, excoriating. Exposing and condemning the religions that have done so much to harm Jews. Starting with Judaism in the Babel series. And then Christianity in the Twistianity series. And then, of course, the greatest foe of Jews for the last 1,400 years, Islam, which will soon be five books, soon to be four, will eventually be five. Some 4,000 pages. They're awaiting you to understand this monster. And it is only then, when there are no other options for the salvation of Jews, that you will finally turn to your God, which is the only thing that makes this good. Well, there's two things that make it good. That's one. The other is that Yahweh predicted everything that's happening. You know, reading Yahweh's predictions 1 year and 7 months ago on this program and in the books that are on that shelf, I predicted exactly what happened on October 7th. I told you exactly who was going to do what to whom and what the consequence was going to be, and it played out exactly as I foretold. And on the evening of October 7th, I laid down another prediction and said that there's going to be 100-fold worse. It's going to happen in Israel's near future. The reason that I can make such statements, and I've been doing this now for 22 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've never gotten one wrong. And they've been bold.
True.
The reason for that is I know Yahweh. Mm. I'm inspired by Yahweh. I have read and studied what Yahweh said was going to happen. And while, as I said, I may not be the best of men, I have a skill set that Yahweh seems to enjoy capitalizing upon, which is to make the connections, the transition from knowing to understanding. And as a result of those things, not only have I shared thousands of profound insights about God, about Yahweh, about his people in these over 30 books on the shelves at yadayah.com, most of them unheralded over the last 3,000 years. But it's also why I'm able to predict your future, Israel. And so when we see everything that God said coming to fruition exactly at the time, when, where, and how he warned Israel that it was going to occur, we have ever more validation. Not for us. I grew to the point where validation was not the least bit helpful, probably 15 years ago. I mean, once you come to know Yahweh intimately, he becomes your father. You don't need him to prove that he is who he is.
Mm-hmm.
But it is helpful when reaching out to those who don't know him.
Exactly.
And so that is why seeing what he has predicted, what he has foretold is going to occur and that we have written about so vociferously. That's why when it transpires this way, we do celebrate it because it is yet another reason for God's people to come home. All right, let's return to the Mizmor. It is with heightened anticipation and enthusiasm that we press on to the fifth of Dode's, what I think are earth-shattering songs. It's truly amazing, even after all of this time, how much we can come to learn from our Savior, the Messiah and King. A Mizmor, Song of Dode, the Beloved, Mizmor La Dode, to the enduring leader, La Ha Natash, on behalf of the everlasting conductor and eternal director, accompanied by stringed instruments. By the way, do you know how many strings there were on most of those instruments?
Seven.
There was one that was unique that had eight, but for the most part, there were seven.
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't you get Leia one?
Yes, it is true, I did. There are a few things as memorable or moving as the lyrics when they're set to melody and music, especially when the thoughts are poignant and the song is stirring. And while we don't know the notes which underscored these lyrics and we cannot replicate the melodious sound of Dode's voice, it is inspiring to know that one day we're going to be able to listen to our King sing these songs for us. The Mizmor begins by revealing that Father and Son were in agreement wanting the same thing to occur relative to what Dodd was saying. This is one of the many times that a prophet scribes a verb such that it conveys first and second person volition. So let's jump right in. It is your will and my desire, because I have chosen and you have decided to thoughtfully listen and respond appropriately. Huzzah. Of your own free will, I want you to pay attention and carefully consider so as to fully appreciate hiphil imperative, paragogike, cohortative. Now, my English teacher would be so proud. Back in the time that I actually had an English teacher, I received a C because my view of English and hers did not jive. But here we are nonetheless. The subject, which could be God, causes the object, those statements, to participate in the action, which is to listen, consider, and respond, such that the Father and Son become ever more alike. Now, what's unique about this is that throughout the whole of Yahweh's testimony, particularly when Moshe is speaking to us, but when any of the prophets speak to us, they have a real simple message. Stop yabbering at God and start listening to him. Before you make a fool of yourself, listen to what he has to say. This is quite different. This is Dodd saying, it's your will, God, to listen to what I want, because what I have chosen and what you have decided upon is something that really is important. And it's important that you and I respond appropriately. Now, I'm going to tell you that as wonderful as the relationship was between Abraham and Yahweh, Abraham couldn't have said this, as disciplined and moral, as thoughtful and articulate as Moshe was, Moshe would never have said such a thing.
Yeah, probably.
Dodd did. It's one of the things that makes Dodd exceptional. He told God, you want to listen to me. Well, on this particular subject, he was right.
Yes.
Yeah. He was offering to do something where God did want to listen to him. So understand, this is the exception of exceptions.
Yeah.
I have a wonderful relationship with Yahweh. We work together. We're best friends. And I understand my relative position by comparison and relative intellect by comparison. But, you know, he doesn't lord that over me, doesn't make me feel in any way inferior, and is exceedingly appreciative. But I will tell you, I am extreme and not putting God on a pedestal, not worshiping him, not bowing down to him, not praying to him, and talking really when we do talk, when we have a conversation, I'm really frank. I say, no, I don't want to do that. You know, he'll take me to school. And he says, well, maybe your thought
good
at
luck.
The moment. But good luck with that, young man. I don't think that's going to work out for us. So we would actually have a fun, loving relationship. I wouldn't even dream of telling God, you want to listen to me. Wouldn't even dream of it.
Mold.
It's your will and my desire because I have chosen and you have decided to thoughtfully listen and respond appropriately to my words, each meaningful phrase and promise. Emir Ani. To my statements regarding the lyrics and utterances from the branch. To my expressive and evocative statements, declarations and proclamations. This is a derivation of the root of amar, to say, to tell, to call, to ask, to intend, to promise, and declare. Yahweh. Now, why does Dod call God by his name when they had the best relationship that Yahweh had with any other human being, and those who are vastly inferior refused to say Yahweh's name? What did Dod know that they don't?
His name.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. Yahweh, the proper pronunciation of the name of Eloah, God, as directed in his Torah teaching regarding his Haya existence and our Shalom restoration. If you can say Eloah, Torah, Shalom, and Haya, then you can pronounce God's name. Because you and I both have come to an understanding. Bien, my favorite Hebrew word.
Mm-hmm.
And I had once thought that yada was my favorite Hebrew word. So I decided, you know, I need a new diploma. I'm going to write anonymously. I'm irrelevant to this story, or so I had thought. And so I chose yada because that sounded like a pretty neat name to know. I mean, that's all I was doing for the last 22 years was coming to know about yada. And so I made, you know, I said, okay, the book's going to be called Yada Yahweh, to know Yahweh. And when we did the show, and I wrote under that name for 10 years, maybe 12.
I remember.
And then something happened, which is we began to read about, well, it began really in Yashayah 11, when Yahweh wrote about a choder, inspired Yashayah to write about a choder, and that guy was going to write a nesh, a sign that God was going to uplift, and because, you know, he may not have been much to work with, he just was the only one to work with, he was going to inspire him with seven spirits, and as a result, even Shlomo, when dedicating the house of the covenant, when it was first built, gleaming on the top of Mount Moriah, stood there and said, Yisrael, you need to know that there's going to be a Nakri, and that he's going to speak to you from the sky. And what he has to say, you need to listen to. He's going to talk about the Zeruah, Dod, the sacrificial lamb. He's going to tell you what you need to hear to reestablish your relationship with me. And by the second time we had read something like that, we said, okay, well, anonymous might have been fun, but it isn't going to fly anymore. And then we found that there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these. That it's one of the most prolific of all prophecies. That at the end, after God essentially realizes, not essentially, states emphatically, that there was no one. I looked. I couldn't find a single person among my people. Not one who was willing to listen to me. After Malachi, radio silence. And so God said, well, you know, if I can't find a Yehudim, this guy, he's not doing anything important. Well, we'll work with him. We'll work with him. And so he has these past almost 23 years. And it's all to awaken Yisrael, Yehudim, and bring you back home. And so this is Yahweh's message. And it is about bien, understanding. I said, yep, there is one word that I came to appreciate more than yada. Bien. Bien is an extraordinary Hebrew term because what bien does is it explains what I think is the single most empowering and enriching thing we humans can do. It's to make connections. It's to understand the relationship between things. If you know a great many things, you could be like a scholar. Unfortunately, you don't understand any of it. But if you can learn, and based upon what you come to know, make the connections that lead to understanding, the most powerful tool in the history of humankind. It'll take you right to God. And that's what BN does. It speaks of making the connections to understand. Now, in this case, it was written in the call, which means a literal interpretation. Imperative, the imperative is second person volition. That means the person being spoken to. In this case, he told you who he's speaking to, God. Paragogic he, which is emphasis. This is really important. And in the cohortative, which is an expression of first person volition. Man, just think of that for a moment. You've got a word that explains the process of going from knowing to understanding, bien, by making the connections. And this verb, dode, is saying, when he's speaking to God, that it is God's desire, his will, and it is dode's desire and his will that we come to understand.
Yeah.
Regarding my thought process, Hagig Ani, what I've been meditating upon and explaining. Let me read that again from the beginning. This is Mizmor, okay. Lyrics to be Sung, 5:1. This is so amazing, so powerful. It is your will, he's speaking to God, Dode is the speaker, it is your will and my desire, because I have chosen and you have decided to thoughtfully listen and respond appropriately to my words, each meaningful phrase and promise, Yahweh, because you and I both have come to an understanding regarding my thought process. Now, it's astonishing that someone would be in a position to tell God, not only do I want you to listen to me, you want to hear what I have to say. And then to say, not only what I have to say, but to each of my words, my promises, Yahweh, because you and I have come to an understanding regarding my thought process. Hey, all Torah, the prophets, they convey Yahweh's thought process, what he's offering his people and what he's expecting in return. That's what they all exist for. And yet Dode, the exemplar of Yisrael, the ultimate example of the covenant, the man that whose attributes and attitudes and intellect God valued beyond all others, the man who he expressed his relationship saying, I am his father, he is my son. The man he anointed 3 times as the Messiah. The man he not only chose to be the king of Yisrael, but said he would return to be the king of Yisrael forevermore. That man has a thought process that God not only understands, but is eager to listen to.
Yeah.
Azan can be rendered as simply as listen or hear, or as anthropomorphically as give ear, as pedantically as hearken or heed, or as inappropriately and religiously as obey and obedient. You hear my phone chirping in the background. It is, the sky is falling. It's, we got a foot of rain. So, you know, when you get a foot of rain in a short period of time, that's a lot of water. And so what we're hearing is the sky is falling. Actually, I live on an island. I think many of you know that. The entire island is without electricity. We've been out of electricity now for many hours. The program could go kaplunk at any time as we transition off the batteries, which were charged by my solar panels, to the generator later this evening. So the sky is falling here and my little island paradise.
Well, thanks for making time for us.
Yeah, we would be wise to do as Azan implies, which is to pay close attention, so as to thoughtfully consider and rationally evaluate, then respond appropriately. Azan speaks of diligently listening with a focus on understanding so as to be informed and to make an intelligent response. Pretty neat word. And
yes.
As is the case, Azan was accompanied by the Hifl stem, which has the subject engaging the object in such a way that the object becomes the subject's understudy. You've done this glossary, Kirk. You probably know all of the terms that make Hebrew so interesting. It's the only language in the world where there is no past, present, or future tense. All truths in Hebrew simply exist. They exist throughout the fabric of time. In other words, Hebrew in Yahweh's revelation is like time itself, eternal, always flowing. And it's not just that, but Hebrew has moods. And the moods express volition, because free will is so essential to a loving relationship. You can express volition or choice, free will, desire in first, second, or third person. And then there are stems that establish the relationship based upon the action of the verb between the person being spoken of and the person speaking, the subject and object of the sentence. That pretty extraordinary kind of a language that Yahweh chose to use to reveal his message to us. Now, we don't often see the imperative and the cohortative moods associated with the same verb. But when we do, we're witnessing a mutual expression of free will within a relationship. Dode is saying that he was in sync with what God wanted, that their inclinations and wills were similar. That is to say that Dode and Yahweh, father and son, are like-minded in the with regard to the subject being discussed. The reason all this matters is because this amazing verb was directed at Emir. Another rich term. It can be rendered as simply as word or words, but that would be leaving us wondering why it was chosen over the vastly more common word for word, which is Dabar.
Mm-hmm.
The answer, of course, is that it's found through careful observation and thoughtful consideration. Emir shapes and shades Amar, which is to speak. The most common Hebrew word for say, said, call, ask, answer, intend, declare, or promise, such that it encourages us to closely examine the most meaningful phrases, especially the strokes of the letters themselves, which compose the words, considering their implications and nuanced references and inferences. Doing so, we find that Emir speaks of the promise associated with the branch. Moreover, Emir encourages us to speak with a purpose and to plan accordingly with regard to every utterance. Yeah, if that were not enough to tantalize the neurons in our brains, this led to another of, as I said, our favorite words, to be in, to make the connections necessary to understand. In this case, based upon the shared inclinations, Bien conveys, we have come to a mutual understanding after considering everything between us. This means that they talked through and that they came to the same conclusion after considering every ramification. Similarly, Bien is our highest calling, our most empowering, enriching, enlightening opportunity in life. In this regard, Bien is best when our thinking is in sync with God's. It's a shame that English Bible translators have so routinely truncated the rich meaning which can be derived from Iowa's chosen language. It is even worse than when we stoop to the lowest possible implications, such as the case with hegig, a word which can be rendered moaning.
Moaning,
but,
yes.
Yeah, it is more correctly translated thought process.
Mm-hmm.
More fully developed, hegig speaks of grasping the intent of the most fervent deliberations by deducing the core message of the discourse. Now, it's one of the very few Hebrew words with two G's in it, which, yeah, that is the nasty letter of the Hebrew language. But it's got two letters that are in Yahweh's name, the hey, which is repeated twice, and the yod, which begins it.
Yeah.
So the Gemil is overwhelmed by the hand of God and of the observant person standing up, reaching up, and looking to God. You know, it is the foot that's going in the wrong direction, but in this case, not so much. What's that, Kirk?
Well, I just, you know, I spent about 4 hours, a couple hours last night and a couple hours today just doing this word and all
really?
The implications.
Okay.
I sent you a few little copies, the short version, and because we were looking for something to put in the glossary of how
mm-hmm.
you work and why, and I listed the other translations and then your translation, and so it's like the rest of them are just trash. And I go back and I went through all this stuff. This is how you got to there. This is what he's going through. Here's the grammar. Here's the this. There is nothing you will find anywhere as a translator that would take a language and do this and explain everything. This is the best teaching instrument
right.
you'll ever see. I mean, it's just phenomenal. I just sat there and for a lot of time last night and also today before we went online, I thought to myself, man, this is just brilliant. And I'm not, I've been with you for 17 years. I'm not just patting you on the back because I mean you're
right.
my friend. I look at it and I go, wow. I mean, I can't think like I can look up this stuff and figure out how you got there, or I can do it independently and compare and get most of it right. But I'm going, wow, what you do is just. You and y'all blow me away.
It's all because of what is written in Yeshayah 11.
If
you read Yeshayah 11, you'll know why it reads this way. Now, that is not to take the person out of the equation. That's not Yahweh's style. He likes the person in the equation. However, when he's trying to convey something that is as vital to his family, to his whole purpose in creating the universe, and this is vital. And the reason it's vital is because if Yehudim aren't awakened, if Israel is not awakened and doesn't in meaningful numbers with quality people turn to Yahweh and accept him, engage in the covenant, respond by answering the invitations to be part of his called-out assemblies. If they don't do that over the next 9 years, it's all for naught. And right now, that is their attitude. So everything is riding on. The entire reason for creating the universe, the earth, creating and conceiving life, conveying the Torah, all of the prophets are riding on this. For 3,000 years, Yehudim have been on the outs with Yahweh. You got no relationship. And that has to change in the next 9. And so Yahweh found a guy that he wanted to work with to communicate this. As I say, he may not be much, but it's how God works. And he provided every tool to make this resonate, to say things that have never been said in all of human history because they need to be said now. And while you could read Yeshaya 11 and say, well, you know, if you're Yahweh's going to apply his seven spirits and provide all of the understanding and courage and insights, boldness to convey this message, then really it's the person themselves is irrelevant. And that's not really true. And the reason it's not true is because of Yahweh's style. He prefers to communicate through individuals because it is easier for us to process it. It's easier for us to approach. We're more comfortable doing so. And, well, Yahweh's intellect, his vocabulary, his ability to reason and his logic so far exceed ours that if he can communicate in a manner that resonates with an individual and that individual is able to share it, then we're communicating. Yeah. He's not talking above you.
Right.
He's talking right to you.
Plus,
Yahweh wants you to feel comfortable. He wants you to be able to relax. And so if he conveys his message through someone, particularly if you look at him and say, wait a minute, he didn't have an education in Hebrew. He didn't have a degree in theology. He's a guy that is pretty ordinary, you know. If he can do this. And there is nothing like this on the planet. I was writing Amazon the other day that they were some kind of concern over a copyright infringement, and who knows how they came to that. It might just be a bot that I found something in the books and had a negative reaction to it. But what I explained to them, I said, listen, I'm more than happy to send you my Word documents, all many thousands of them that, you know, are directly from my computer. You know, they're all tagged with all the metadata from my computer and when I wrote them. I'm happy to supply you with that. But I just wanted to tell you something. These are the most original books ever. There's nothing like this. Not anything anywhere close to them. It's one of the reasons we know when God's speaking of these prophecies and encouraging these people to come home that he's speaking of what we're doing because there's nothing else like it.
Yeah. Right.
It.
So it's almost an out-of-body third-person experience when you're doing this because you know that Yahweh is inspiring it and empowering it, but yet you do know that all of our unique and individual aptitudes and attitudes are poured into it. I mean, that's why when I read to you this evening, my response and commentary on Quran 5:33. But I had to walk away. It's not just an intellectual exercise.
Right.
I'm invested in this.
Oh, truly.
As we all are.
There's emotion. Yeah.
You know, he's dad. I'm his kid. I'm really proud of him. And just like any good kid, I want my father to be proud of what we're doing together. So it's amazing here. The only thing Dode would have spoken to God about with this sense of urgency, where it would have been essential that Yahweh listen to everything he had to say before responding, would have been the Messiah's participation in the Moedim, for his sacrifice to prevail, they would have to talk it all out, to think it all through, to be of like mind and a complete agreement. For Dode's sacrifice to prevail, father and son would have to talk it all out, think it all through, and be of like mind and in complete agreement. To a lesser degree, but very consistent with this, for you and I to capitalize on Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, Shavuot, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah, we also have to talk it out. We have to think it all through. We have to be of like mind with our God. The exact same process. It's amazing to witness how bold Dode was in communication with God. And it, had it not been to make certain that they had come to understand all of the ramifications that he was proposing, I don't think that even Dode would have the backbone, the courage, the character to say such a thing. I mean, this is a man taking God off his pedestal. This is a man saying, you and I are in this together. We're working together. We're a team. We're father and son. And for this to work, we are going to have to communicate effectively. We're going to have to be in complete agreement. And it's really true, because God could not execute the plan of the Moed Mikre without his son. Couldn't do it. And Dode would have sacrificed for nothing without the full participation of Yahweh. And you might say, how dare you say that God couldn't do something, that he needed to work through a person? I'm just telling you the facts.
Mm-hmm.
God told Abraham and Yitzhak that he was going to provide the lamb, and he told them that it would be by his son. God can't be the lamb. He needed to offer one, and that lamb had to be somebody special, because it was going to be for all time and for every member of the covenant. There's only one person that was God's son, his firstborn, that could do this. It was Dode. God can't fulfill the covenant without people. It's a relationship.
And it's similar to how we found out about you. It was already written there, but we recognized it. You recognized it. And I think it was the same for Dode. He loved the Torah. He read it. He spent time with it. And he realized, oh, I'm already in here. This is
I'm
the plan we agreed.
As a matter of fact, the Bodim 18, the prophecy of the one who will come after me, the one who is from among your brethren, who will be like me. That's Dode. And Dode would have recognized it. If I can see Dode in it, he can sure as heck see himself in it, right?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. So Dode saw himself. He understood. When you read, and he read, the whole story of what happened on Mount Moriah, and there he is on Mount Moriah.
Yeah.
There's where his home is, on Mount Moriah, and he's reading about the father and son with Abraham and Yitzhak, your only son, the son that you love. And he's heard Yahweh say to him and to no one else, you are my son. I am your father whom I love. And
he can connect the dots.
Little BN, and he was right there. Oh.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yes.
It's me.
Oh. Yep.
And he is the most hellish duty in the history of humankind that he was being asked to do.
Yeah.
But he volunteered for it because it was the right thing to do, and because he knew that for 2 days he would gain an eternity not only of respect, admiration of his father, which was enough all by itself, but he would save his people. He was going to the battle for them for the 67th time. And this time he was saving them from themselves. Dode was volunteering to intervene on our behalf, providing justification for the salvation of his people. We both agree that it is mutually beneficial if you listen attentively and respond accordingly. Kashab. As a result of our choices and desires being in sync and with you and I being inclined to listen and reply, please attentively receive this request for an answer. Hifl, imperative, paragogic, cohortative. To the sound of my urgent and significant request, of my appeal for assistance, my imploring and pleading to help, my sovereign and counselor and my God. Indeed, because for you and solely on my own initiative, I want to provide the justification to intervene independently and on my own accord, having thought about it and all of the future contingencies while foreseeing the future. I want to be persuasive in conveying my point of view, presenting an argument to intercede, working as a mediator to arbitrate an agreement. Hit Pael, imperfect, which means on my own initiative and my own accord without any outside influence or assistance, with continuous action and an ongoing results pursuant to providing this resolution. Mizmor lyric to be sung. Psalm 5:2. As clearly as words can speak to us, Dode wrote what he and his father, that they were of one accord regarding what the Son is explaining, particularly why it was appropriate for him to serve as an intermediary, as someone intervening on behalf of the people. It is now the second time that he has shared this with us, the first occurring at the opening line of the fourth Mizmor, if you recall. And there it hit us right between the eyes, as if a well-placed stone from Dode's sling. Because in the next statement, he asks us why we are continuing to disregard his gift, even showing a preference for religious myths over the truth. Now, in response, I found myself editing the entire Yada Yahweh series, rewriting it from the beginning with Babel, and then here with coming home, and well, it was another year of my life to properly convey what Dode had volunteered to achieve, why he had done so, and how that influences how we view the Moed Mikre in the covenant itself. This man, our father, everything we know about God pivots around what he's talking about here. Well, I knew long ago that the first four Moed had been fulfilled and that there was no Jesus Christ and that Dode was the Messiah and he was the Son of God. I simply did not understand why the Messiah volunteered to fulfill Pesach and Matzah, leading to Bikurim and Shavuah. And I couldn't understand why Yahweh would allow him to do so. Likewise, I could not comprehend why Yahweh would entertain, much less support, this decision. Recognizing that the 22nd Mizmor depiction of the fulfillment of Chag Matzah, particularly Pesach and Roman crucifixion, was written in first person, providing the narration. I had assumed that, incorrectly, that Yahweh had used his Nefesh Shol as an elaborate living probe, creating an avatar to fulfill Pesach and Matzah. even though it was awkward to have this aspect of Yahweh enter Sheol, and even more so to have the father fulfill firstborn children. Undeterred, I gave that avatar a name, Yahusha, Yahweh Saves. It served as an accurate depiction of the mission, even a prophetic portrait of the Pisakael. But nonetheless, the Mizmor was written in first person by Dod. It wasn't that the Passover lamb was never named. It's that he was always named Dod. The most important discovery, I think, in human history was right there in the open, hidden in plain sight, there for everyone to see. And yet, it was only when returning to translate the Mizmor for Volume 3 of Coming Home, a book that's not even published yet, years ago, and I can't even complete it because there's so much to correct, to share. That Dod's motivation and subsequent justification for enduring Chag Matzah became clear. His reasons were so compelling. His father listened and agreed, supporting his son's courageous and compassionate conclusion. And while I will share his thinking on this matter with you at the beginning of Dod, the Beloved, volume of Coming Home, and I'll do my best to fill in the blanks between now and then. Suffice it to say for now that this is where these words lead. And as we've stated before, that's where we go. It began with Ashri, joyful and with me, and blessed by me, fortunate in the relationship, and stepping along the straightforward path which I have provided to give meaning with life. That's how the first Mizmor begins. And Dod has stayed on topic, traveling down the path of the Mikre since then, leading us to this place in the fourth and fifth Mizmors. Having missed what now appears obvious throughout his first four songs during the original draft of what was the first volume of Coming Home, I explained that the reason God inspired his son to say that he would be serving as an intermediary and an intercessor is that his words would lead us home. I surmised at the time that since Yahweh created the universe and conceived life with words, he would renew and restore life by affirming his covenant through his Mikre with words. There's nothing as powerful as the word of God, and no one spoke it as effectively as did Dod. He did not take this responsibility lightly. He could be used in this way because he was competent and correct, prepared and ready, capable and courageous. In fact, when Gabor is written as an attribute of Dod, and Gabriel, which is a compound of Gabor and El, God, reveals that Dod, the Messiah, our King, our Savior, the Zeruah, is God's single most competent, courageous, and capable of all men. Yahweh, in the morning, you hear the sound of my voice. At the outset of the day, I make arrangements and prepare myself for you, such that I am competent and correct, ready for you to deploy. then I remain watchful and focused. Yahweh, an accurate transliteration of the name of Eloah, God, as guided by his Torah instructions regarding his higher existence and our shalom reconciliation. Bukur, in the morning, when it is best to gain information regarding the sacrifice, as the sun rises during a new day, when enlightenment increases. You hear, you listen to the sound of my voice. At the outset of that day, at the early part of the day, as the sun rises and increases, when it is best to gain information, I make arrangements and prepare myself for you such that I am competent and correct, ready for you to deploy. I pattern myself after you, making purposeful and orderly preparations, taking the proper positions to be valuable and worth using, so that I can engage quickly and thoughtfully, taking immediate action on your behalf. Then I remain watchful and focused. I remain intently observant, properly adorned, and everything arranged. Mizmor lyric to be sung, 5-3. Now, something very powerful about this, and that is that there are a lot of people, I think about 100 billion people have, human beings, Homo sapiens, have lived on this planet. And yet there's only one that God used in this magnificent way. Why? Because he was competent. He was correct about God. He was ready for God to deploy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That more than anything else is why. There haven't been a lot of people that meet that criterion. You know, most people that God has worked through, Moshe, God prepared him for that role. Abraham, Yahweh prepared him for that role. He was ready for the role. He was prepared. And Doe did a lot along the way to prepare himself. The most important messages ever written to humankind came from Doe's hand, the 119th Mizmor on the ways to observe the Torah. The 91st Mizmor as to why you can courageously work for Yah to serve alongside, because he's going to protect you and care for you so that you're not taking any risk when boldly telling the truth. You know, the 19th Mizmor, which so eloquently explains the value of the Torah in our lives. The 23rd Mizmor, explaining the relationship between shepherd and his sheep. The 22nd Mizmor that explained the means that God was going to use to fulfill Pesach, Matzah, leading to Bikurim and Shavuah. You know, these are powerful, powerful songs. And I think probably the most powerful of them all was written immediately after Dode's life was fulfilled in the first of three phases of it, in the 98th Mizmor, perhaps the most powerful song ever written. It's all there for us. And because Dode did these things, because he wrote between the songs, Mizmor, and the Mashal Proverbs, wrote 100 of them, and had gone out to defend God's people 66 times, always successful. Because he listened to Yahweh. He loved Yahweh. Because he'd had so many wonderful successes alongside Yahweh. And he had made his mistakes, embarrassed by them and learned from them, he was prepared. That was enough. Prepared and willing. That was enough. Well, based upon these words, Dode earned his place with God. Was not given to him. And says Yahweh is ready and available, valuable and useful, even to the Almighty. This is breathtaking in its implications. We can be used by God if we're prepared. You can't be used by God if you don't know who he is, if you don't know his name, if you don't know what he is offering and what he expects in return. If you don't understand why he hates religion and politics, you're not in a position to be used by him.
Yeah.
If you're not willing to go where his words lead, you're not prepared to be used by him. If you're not devoted to studying his words, you're not prepared to be used by him. If you worship him, you're not prepared to be used by him. If you want to personally profit monetarily, as rabbis do, you're not prepared to be used by him. Now, there's not a lot of people that have been prepared to be used by him, but that number is growing, and it is essential for the well-being of Israel. The best example just happens to be Dode. So it bears repeating. Dode was useful because he was correct, and he was correct because his testimony about God was wholly consistent with what Yahweh had to say about himself, especially in his Torah teaching. Well, it is not commonly known, Bakur, mourning, can also be translated sacrifice, which is particularly fitting in this context.
Mm-hmm.
And so are Bakur's derivative meanings, which include at the outset of the day, a time of increasing visibility and enlightenment. You know, I can't speak for everybody, and I know that, Dee, you're a night owl.
Me too.
I'm a morning person. I'm very much like Dode. Sun starts to peak.
I wish I was.
up, and I can't wait to get up and get going. Sun goes, you know, down, and I'm saying, you know, it's time for me to wind down. This day is done. I love the light.
Yeah,
and so did Dode. He was a morning person. Now, if ever there was a well-placed word, the verbal phrase Arak La Ata is perfect in this setting. Dode revealed, Arak La Ata, I make arrangements and prepare myself for you such that I'm competent and correct, ready for you to deploy. Patterning myself after you so that I'm worth using. Yeah, it's a pretty simple agenda, really. When we begin to think like Yahweh, when we align our desires and hopes with Yahweh, when we are familiar with what he is asking and offering and asking in return, we become useful. It's not hard. Want what God wants, and you're going to get what you want.
Yeah.
Our foremost goal in attempting to be like Dode is to be tzedak, right about God. We remain dysfunctional until we are correct. And by this statement, the Messiah is inferring that his own people are still unfit for service. This means that Judaism is precluding Jews from knowing and serving Yahweh. At this point, Judaism is a more formidable foe against God's people than are Christianity and Islam combined.
That's pretty bad.
For God, you are not willing to accept that which is wrong. Well, that pretty much ends it for Judaism, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
We're right now at the end of our broadcast period in this program. We will continue to record. Most people who are listening to us tonight are listening via their telephones, which means they can still hear us. And we are still recording, which means the part of this program will still be posted in the various archive places. And as we know, 99% of the listeners to this program are to the archives. So we will continue for a bit longer. But this statement, Mizmor Psalm 5:4 reads, for God, you are not willing to accept that which is wrong. You're not desirous or able to waver regarding that which is fraudulent because you're just not willing to endure criminal injustice, malicious condemnation, or malevolent guilt. Countrymen who are counterproductive and harmful, raw. Related individuals who are disagreeable and distressful, injurious and unethical, loudmouthed and adversarial, cannot congregate or dwell with you because they are alien to you and they conspire against you. Yeah, I was pretty clear with Sukkah that he is bringing us back to conditions experienced in Eden. Sukkah means to camp out. And so the whole story of man's 7,000 years with and apart from God, where it began in the Garden of Great Joy, Gan Eden, with Adam and then Adam and Chawa, where God and the first couple spent their days together, learning together, chatting together, experiencing life together. And then because Adam and Chawa decided to disregard God's instructions, they were escorted out of the garden. And we were invited back in 2,000 years later when Abraham and his son Yishak came to fulfill the means to be part of God's family, the covenant, which brings us back into a loving relationship with our Father. And then 2,000 years, 40 Yobel after that time, Dod, the Son of God, fulfilled the first four Mikre on that very same spot to bring us into fellowship with our Father, making us immortal, opening the doorway to God's home, perfecting us by removing our guilt, taking it off to Sheol, would never be seen again, perfecting us thereby in God's eyes so that we could join him and become firstborn children on Bukurim and then on Shavuah, be enriched and empowered by him, and then come to Ruah to tell this story, to encourage God's people to come back home, to the ultimate family reunion, which will occur on Yom Kippurim when Dod comes back dressed for success. He's going to be dressed wearing the priestly garments because his first order of business is to anoint the Kippurim, the reconciling seat of the Ark of the Covenant, fulfilling the Torah's mandate to reconcile our relationship such that 5 days later we can camp out with our Heavenly Father back in Eden as the whole world is transformed back into that condition. I share this with you because what wasn't in Eden? Man was there, God was there. Religion was not. Politics was not. Militancy was not. And when conspiracy entered the garden, then no one was part of it. So, for us to go back to those conditions, what has to be removed?
Religion.
Politics, conspiracy, militancy. All of those things have to go. And so that's what God's going to do with his son, Dod, and do it soon. Here in just over 9 years, when he returns, he's going to remove all traces of religion and politics from the earth. Why do you think that the first condition of the covenant has Abraham walk away from Babel, from the commingling and confusing integration of religion and politics in Babylon? Walking away from his country. Yeah, from the family of man to the family of God in the covenant. The first condition of the covenant. The second, you know, is walk to me and become perfected. That's how we walk to God, is via the seven of his Moed Mikre. We are become immortal on Pesach, perfected on Matzah, adopted on Bukurim, empowered and enriched on Shavuah. This is the message. Dod is the means to fulfill it. And then, you know, God says, trust and rely on me. He says, come to closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of this covenant. Mm-hmm. So you know what I'm offering and expecting in return. First four conditions of the covenant. The fifth is to circumcise our sons so that we as parents remember this special relationship and so we raise our children to become part of his family. That is the message of the covenant. That is the message of this Mizmor. God isn't going to spend his eternity with those who are wrong. Rasha is an amazing term because Rasha is the closest term in the Torah to religion. It is broad-based wrong. It is based upon Ra, which is the Hebrew word both for countrymen and loud-mouthed evil proclamations. Russia is Israel of all people being wrong. It's Israel being religious. It is the thing that God speaks about and condemns more than any other subject throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. It's amazing that Jews have Judaism when God said that one reason that our relationship is estranged, the reason that we aren't working together anymore, the reason we are separated, the reason you're suffering is because you're religious.
Yeah.
And yet they continue to be religious. Why?
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
How can you have Judaism and claim to be Torah observant when throughout the Torah and Psalms, the number one topic is don't be religious?
Don't be, yeah. Strange.
It shouldn't be that hard. For God, you are not willing to accept that which is wrong, to accept that which is religious. Rasha, to accept those who are among your people, my neighbors, the countrymen, Ra, countrymen who are counterproductive and harmful. He's explaining what Rasha means with Ra.
Mm-hmm.
Because you cannot congregate or dwell with you because they are alien to you and they conspire against you. Dode is revealing that he earned the right to serve as the Passover lamb because he was right with God and properly prepared to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And well, that's true. This was also written for us to apply his experience to our own lives. And from this perspective, consider your mortal existence. It's a test, an opportunity to demonstrate that your soul is prepared to serve Yahweh and then worth being saved by him. Since it is God's bereath and his bayeth, his covenant relationship and his family, because eternity is a very long time to endure annoying and ill-fitting guests, Yahweh must determine which souls will make heaven more or less interesting, more or less enjoyable for himself and the rest of the family. And so he is excluding the religious and the political, the patriotic and the conspiratorial, the militant as well.
Yeah.
Well, Dode opened heaven's door and made it possible for us to enter through it as his brothers and sisters. There are inalienable criterion for admission. Wrong will not work. The key to heaven has to fit. It is about being right. Unfortunately, for most of the past 3,000 years, Jews have been incorrect about Yahweh, beginning 2,000 years ago by denying Dode's role in fulfilling Chag Matzah. Judaism made it far worse. This is why Yahweh chose to enable a goy, yuck, to serve as his final witness. Eat crow, Israel. You need to.
Yep.
In fact, the choice of a goy was to drive that message home to you. Yes, a goy. Yuck. Heralding the Son of God's return. You won't even acknowledge that God had a son. You don't know your Messiah's name. You have no idea what Pesach, Matzah, Bikurim, and Shavuah represent. You've changed Teruah so that it's a Babylonian holiday. You are really confused. Of all things, a yucky goy has to correct you. Serving as the final witness, heralding the Son's return. And it is why I echo Dode's tenor and speak out so boldly against the caustic influences of Judaism. The rabbis have conspired against Father and Son, and they're going to be condemned for having vociferously rebelled. On a positive note, for those seeking to contribute to the covenant family, the initial step is prior preparation. At the very least, please read Yada Yawa from beginning to end. Know what is right before speaking out, or lest you risk adding to the misconceptions. There's a wonderful aspect of all of this. Mm-hmm. And that is that by doing what Dode did, being prepared to be deployed, you get the time to study. What's more rewarding than studying the Word of God? It's uplifting. It's emancipating. It is enriching. It is enlightening. It's fun. God has a sense of humor. It doesn't require any prayer. Doesn't require any worship. It doesn't require any humility. It simply takes an investment of time, and your time is rewarded infinitely. Take some energy, but your energy is rewarded infinitely.
Oh, yeah.
It's the single most important thing you can do, the most valuable, the most fun, the most beneficial thing you can do, and you get to be prepared before you act. God doesn't want you out making a fool of yourself or of him. Take the time to learn. And so you've got all the time in the world to learn. You know, and if you... you're among those who say, hey, God, I'm a slow learner. You may take all the time that's remaining, but somewhere along the way, it's time to engage. And Yahweh is really clear about working. He likes to work. He likes to work with and through people. He likes people who enjoy working. Working is a good thing. Builds character. Gives you a sense of purpose. It makes life worthwhile. You know, Dee, I know we've talked, and you've have a growing family, and it's a lot of responsibility, and sometimes it looks like, oh my God, this is overwhelming. But where do you get your energy? Where do you get the part of life that says this is a wonderful situation I'm in?
It's just this passion. It definitely bubbles up, and it's similar to Dode's name, like you said. If we're reflecting his attributes, the bubbling passion for Yahweh, it's a win-win.
Yes. The more you contribute, the more you gain. And no matter how much you give, he gives more.
Yeah, sure. Definitely.
So there is something really wonderful about working with our Father and of pleasing him.
It makes all the bad stuff fade. And you just, it gives you presence, you know, in the moment of how important this is, and that Yahweh really does enjoy working with others, gives you incentive.
Yes.
I mean, nobody wants to work for a slave driver. You know, that Yahweh is so fair.
He is.
Like you said, the reward is just incredible. It's almost, I'm with you in that I don't like being thanked for doing this because it's almost selfish what I get out of this.
Yeah, I know. That's my view too. It just, Yeah, it's we gain so much more than we give.
Yeah, for sure.
Now there are times where I would say, okay, you know, it really is work. This whole diving back into Islam.
You're in the swamp.
Yeah, that is a swamp. It is. But even there, there's this sense of, you know, I'm doing the single most dangerous thing a person can do.
Yeah.
The most courageous act that a person can possibly engage in. And I'm doing it with Yahweh. And I can be bold. I can do things that no one else on the planet can do because I was specifically called by Yah to do this. And so even in the midst of it, you know, everything that you say, you know, it's been inspired by the creator of the universe. And that you have this great opportunity to serve with him in an exceedingly important and yet exceedingly dangerous mission. Man, can you imagine going off to defend God's people with God? You know, that is what goddamn religion was all about.
No joke.
So it is exciting. You know, if you're, what's it, Don Quixote, did you go into hell for a heavenly cause?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Amen.
There's something enormously rewarding about that. And,
sure.
You know, when I began doing this 23 years ago, Yahweh said, I want you to start with Islam. And I had thought I had done a marvelous job. I thought I'd written the most comprehensive, the most chronological, contextual presentation of Islam. And, you know, I go back and rewriting it now, and it just, I read what I wrote, and all I do is delete. It's just start over. I mean, there is so little that made it from prophet of doom to goddamn religion. It's but I want to tell you, having started there and done something that no one has ever done before, which is to expose and condemn Islam and survive it.
Yeah.
What a character-building moment, a confidence-inspiring moment. At that point, you know, there is nothing
moment.
We can't accomplish together.
Yeah.
And then, maybe reward is the wrong word, but I'm going to use it for the lack of a better one, to be rewarded with the single greatest discovery in human history.
Mm-hmm.
That Dode, the Messiah, the Son of God, fulfilled the Moed Mikre. It's like God said, okay, we did this together. You know, you've now prepared. You've got the same passion and confidence in our relationship, so you're the one I'm going to let tell this story. What a wonderful reward and a thrill.
It's an honor.
And to have it parceled out over time. So, you know, Dode wasn't given this opportunity. He earned it. We've been doing this now for 23 years. Nothing was given to us on a platter. We worked at it. We earned it. Now, I've got to be careful about pushing that too far. But Yahweh wouldn't begrudge us saying, you know, you do this for 23 years, 8, 10, 12 hours a day, 6 and 7 days a week. Yeah, you know, you've made a contribution. You're prepared. You've worked at it. And that's what positions us to be effective with God. You know, when Moshe was in the midst of the Exodus and everybody around him says, you know, you're working yourself to a bone. I mean, you just can't keep in doing this. You need to learn to delegate. Remember that episode in the in the Torah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, bro.
And Moshe is saying, no, I'm fine. I'm done. This is great. I'm enjoying myself. So what if I'm a 100-year-old dude? We're having a great time. Don't worry about me. That's exactly how we all feel. you know, I'm no longer a youngster. And I look at people who are my age, and they're 20 years, 30 years older than I am. The way their minds work, the way their bodies work. You know, you dedicated to doing something God wants, he keeps it together. He
For
makes
sure.
it work. He keeps you young, keeps the mind alive. It's and there is not too much. You know, in fact, my wife, which I, one of the things I love her for, she never tries to pull me away from this.
Yeah.
You know, and makes it possible for me to do this because, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's not a slave driver. He doesn't yeah. demand that we do it, but we can't help but want to do it. You know, we've got...
Especially with the time taking...
Yeah, with the time that's left and with so much at stake. Can you imagine
yes.
how much more joyful it's going to be if there are 77,000 Yehudim and Yisraelites and many ecstatic Goyim who were there for the family reunion celebrating Yah's return, and Yah is having this wonderful moment with his son and with his full family, and you get to look over there and see the bright countenance of their faces? And knowing that you made a contribution and you get to
beautiful.
Carry that joy and satisfaction with you for all eternity, you know, why wouldn't you want to make a difference?
Mm-hmm.
Or by comparison, okay, so, you know, I could go off and boat and play golf or sit out in the sun or, and what's going to happen when there aren't 77,000 people there. When it happens, but not barely because you didn't do what needed to be done. Can you imagine spending eternity knowing that there may be 70,000 souls that didn't get the message because you were just too lazy? Yeah, I don't want that. I just don't want that. And so, you know, we are motivated for lots of reasons, and there's no reason not to be motivated by the love of Yah and the joy that comes to us when we engage in this way. But there's also nothing wrong with being motivated as, no, I don't want to fail my father. I don't want my father disappointed. I want him thrilled. And
yeah.
I don't want anybody not there because we weren't prepared. We weren't committed. And we weren't willing to put in the effort. So we do, and we do this for you. And Yisrael, we want you to listen, and we want you to come home. Yahweh is calling you home. Your Messiah, the Son of God, and your Savior is calling you back home. His name is Dod. He fulfilled the Mikre, for you. He has perfected you. He has enabled you to be immortal. He's done everything necessary for you to be part of Yahweh's family, for you to be enriched, to be empowered. It's the greatest offer ever made. And all you have to do is accept.
Mm. Yeah.
So may Yah bless. Have a wonderful Shabbat to everyone, for those having a conniption fit that we are, in fact, talking to you on the Shabbat. And tomorrow, going to work with Yah on the Shabbat. Get over yourselves.
Yeah. Get over it.
Yahweh didn't go take a nap on the Shabbat.
No.
The Shabbat is to celebrate the relationship. It, you know, if you've got an ordinary job and that ordinary job has nothing to do with Yahweh, then you ought not do that ordinary job and celebrate the relationship on the Shabbat. If your entire life revolves around celebrating the relationship with Yahweh, then by all means, celebrate it enthusiastically, especially on the Shabbat, which was made for...
They can reference Shemot 20, verse 10. It says the Shabbat is to approach Yahweh, which is a verb, actively walk and approach Yahweh. So,
yes. By the way, Shabbat is a verb.
Yeah,
verbs
it is
are,
a verb.
Verbs are actionable, folks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Shabbat is a verb, and verbs are actionable. So with
yeah.
that, we will leave you and share that we love our Father, If you come to know him, you will love him too.
Mm.
Good night.
Yeah.
May Yah bless.
Night, y'all.
Night, guys.
After countless steps and more than a few miles, your dog drives you forward one last time to make that final climb. And as the rising sun peeks out from the horizon, you know, incredible happens here, because it starts here with the fuel that makes it all possible, Pro Plan Sport. Discover advanced nutrition made to fuel strength and stamina in active dogs like yours at ProPlansport.com.
At Fine Wine and Good Spirits, the word and brings together more than what our name suggests. More than wine from regions all around the world. And more than the ingredients to craft a perfect cocktail. Because while and is at the center of everything we do, it's only the start of all you can discover. No matter what you're bringing together, Fine Wine and Good Spirits will be here to help complete every unique combination. The possibilities are endless. Stop in stores or explore more at fwgs.com. Please enjoy responsibly.